This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Thank you for coming up that road this morning and joining us. It's wonderful to see you, some old friends and new friends, and it's lovely to be together. I want to first acknowledge that we are actually on the ancestral lands of the Ohlone people. They inhabited this region for the whole Bay Area, really, for over 10,000 years. So we respect that heritage, and that we are finding out more and more and more and more that we are all immigrants here. And we understand this more and more deeply. And the Ohlone people had a very reciprocal relationship with the land here, and they took care of it, its ecology, and its future, and it's because of them that we're here in a long way. And we thank them. So. Well, I think we've all had a whole week now to recover from daylight savings time. It's been a little bit of a journey, this changing of the clocks. I really like these moments that I like to call them wobbles, these little sense of wobbles about time. And the clock gave me a little wobble, the clock change, because I notice when our sense of time changes, we actually come face to face with our habits about time and our agreements. This is the time now, we've agreed, and our perception about time. This term wobble, it's not a scientific term, just so you know. It's just this word I use to describe when I notice that my actual experience of things is not what I think it is. There's this little kind of shift in awareness between how I think things are and how they're actually happening. And especially this awareness that I think I know what's happening, and then something shifts, the wobble happens, and I have a little, I wouldn't call it doubt in a way that makes me feel bad. It's more like I have a question, well, wait a minute, or somebody said to me this week, is this a dream? Is this exactly what I thought it was, or is it something else? And what I notice in wobbles is a very defining kind of clarity that this, whoever she is in any given moment, she's creating reality. Like my entire world is a fabrication of this. And by the way, when I say this, I mean this too, right? This is this, and this is this. And there isn't a that. We'll talk a little bit more about this and that, maybe. So this time change is one of those ways in which we experience something new again, time. That's a wobble. Everything I know about time in the scientific way, I learned from one of my older brothers when I was about 5 or 6. I'll tell you a story about that in a minute. But what I have learned, both from my brother, but also from high school and college physics class, is that the physicists want us to understand that time is not like a clock. It just does not break down into these little discrete, even seconds and minutes and hours. Time is not actually external. It's hard for us to kind of get that linguistically. You might get it through your body. It's not external in the sense, well, as Dogen Zenji said, time is actually being time. Time is being time. So if we think of time as a clock, then it seems very separate, right? It's on the wall, and it's going to keep going exactly in these little tiny increments, whether or not we're there to attend to it. And the physicists say, that's not what time is. Time is a river. time is a continuous flow that is not dividable into these increments that are regular like that, seconds, minutes, and hours. It is something else. And I guess one way of putting it is that if we want to look at time not as a clock, but it's separate from us, but as a river, then we are actually the river and the swimmer and everything associated with the river of time, not separate. And that's what Dogen meant when he called time being. We are an expression of time. So when we think of time as a river, it changes our perception, kind of like the clock's changing. Kind of depends on where you enter the river, right? How you experience it. So maybe you experience time in any given moment, like you're going over a waterfall, and it is fast. Those of you who are raising children might have that experience. What is going on with time? My children are grown, and I don't know what happened. And sometimes you experience time is incredibly slowed down. Maybe you had that experience driving around a wide bend in the curve coming up to Jikoji this morning. Time slowed down, especially if someone was on your butt and you had to pull over. Slowing down of time. So I mentioned that when I was a kid, my brother taught me about physics. He taught me how to read. He taught me a lot of stuff. But he also taught me, he liked to use me in his thought experiments. He was just about 2 years older than I am. He still is. He doesn't torture me like this anymore. But he did. And it was actually in a really interesting time experiment that I have, you know, I'm coming up on 70 in a few years, and so this has stayed with me my entire life. So I was probably 5 or 6 years old, and he said, you know, I could put you in a spaceship, a really fast spaceship, going at the speed of light. And that already was a little frightening to a 5 or 6 year old. Like, uh-oh, where's he sending me? I could put you in a super fast spaceship going almost at the speed of light, and I could send you away for 5 years. The alarms are going off in my little body, like, I don't want to go away for 5 years. And then you could come back. Whew, okay, I'm coming back. But when you came back, you'd still be a little girl, but everyone you know would be dead or old, really old, like 50 or 60. I didn't like this wobble. I was not into existential wobbles when I was 5 or 6. But now it's another story. I actually seek out wobbles, because life has kind of demonstrated to me the fluidity of the river of time. And I like the change, because it's what's here, and we have no choice. And fighting against it makes things worse. So wobbliness has become kind of a sought-out moment. And I have it here pretty regularly. I live at Jikoji. This is my third year of living here pretty much all the time. I go away occasionally, because if I didn't, you wouldn't want to talk to me. And I need a breather, and I go away. But while I'm here, I'm in a kind of very fortunate circumstance of being able to slow down. Compared to all of you down in the real world out there, where there are a lot of bodies all the time, which I experience going to Trader Joe's, and I actually enjoy. But up here, I get to slow down in a very wobble-seeking way, let's put it that way. And one of my favorite little habits that I used to think was a secret, but I don't think there are any secrets out. Nothing's hidden. Is I like to sit outside, especially when Jero, I don't know if he's here, is hitting the horn in the morning, when there's the hound is sounding. I like to sit outside and I watch the light. I just watch the light move. Now it's dark in the morning, but before daylight savings time, I could watch the light. And I focus on a tree or a bush, but sometimes it's a shrub, or sometimes it's just a single leaf. Right now I'm looking at a single leaf outside of Coben's candle there. And I focus on it incredibly intently. So I'm watching the light, let's say, on a leaf. And I watch it with my entire being. There is nothing else happening except watching, observing this light. And it's an interesting thing that happens. So as long as I'm staring at that light, I can see change. I can watch it happening. It's extremely subtle and slow, the way light moves. But you know it's moving, right? The earth is turning. So I watch the leaf or the tree or the shrub, and I watch the light, and it's moving like that. So I can't really see this, but I see this. But if I look away for even a second, if my attention is to a turkey, or Tyson's coming down the walk, or a squirrel, or a bird, or, you know, there's lots of sounds here. If I get lose my attention for a second, and then I look back at the leaf, it has leapt forward, no question. Light has moved from this place to this place on the tree or the shrub or the leaf. So that's the wobble of the morning light. I think it's extremely curious how my perception shifts by my attention. So I particularly like wobbles, I mentioned, because they make me rethink my opinions about reality. But also because they seem to kind of blur the line between the thing that I'm perceiving and the perceiver. It just feels like there are no real edges to this relationship in those moments. Of course, that's how it is all the time. Sometimes we really notice it. It's also, for me, a very poignant reminder of impermanence. My friend Khosu, who's Shuso right now, likes to say, the favorite topic for all Buddhists is suffering. But for me, my favorite topic is impermanence. I think maybe I've exhausted suffering. Not, trust me, I'm still suffering. But I think I may have gotten tired of talking about suffering, and now I really like to talk about impermanence. It's very, very alive all the time for me. I don't know if that's better or worse, but that's how it is. And as you know, impermanence is one of the foundational teachings of Buddhism. And in fact, it's one of the three marks of existence, which applies to all existence, everything. And the three marks are, I'm going to ask you to help me with the pronunciation, my Sanskrit-speaking friend. The first is impermanence anicca or anicca.
Anicca.
Anicca. The second is suffering or unsatisfactoriness, which we call dukkha. Okay. And the third is selflessness or non-self, which means not a fixed essence to anything. And that, I think, is called anatta. Anatta. A-N-A-T-T-A, transliterated. Okay, anyway. Those are, we're doing our best with the telephone game of these terms. So when we notice impermanence, we actually cannot help but notice our desire to try to hold on to things, even though they are actually slipping through our fingers like the light across the leaves. We really spend a lot of energy trying to make things hold still. And by the way, that is suffering. So maybe it is our favorite topic. We try, both with our ego, give me something stable, and our habits. It's 9 o'clock, so this is what we're doing at 9 o'clock. All sorts of habits that are not so benign. We are always kind of trying to get a grip on some kind of certainty. We want to make solid the river of time. We try to fix time like it's a clock. We tend to treat impermanence and uncertainty kind of like an enemy, right? We have an idea all the time that it shouldn't be like this, which is really pretty funny if you think about it, because it's happening, and we're standing on the sidelines saying, no, not like that, please. Whole world, adjust your axis, please. I would like it to happen like this. And everyone on the whole planet is doing this, so it would be very confused Earth if it had to follow our timelines. And actually, this uncertainty is a painful thing for us. Not just in terms of you know, this temporal experience of time, but also when we turn on the news, when you look at the world on fire. And there's some anguish associated with the uncertainty of how we treat each other. So we tend to think of it as, you know, something we don't like and we want to fix and alter. We really would like to know exactly what's happening. No wobbles, please. And we'd also like to have some certainty about what's coming next, please. But when we demand that kind of certainty, we're in trouble. We're kind of in trouble. Both individually and as a species, we're in trouble. We're actually asking the river to stop flowing so that we get a footing. It can't stop flowing. It won't stop flowing. There's no possibility. And if we stop it, we're actually closing off all the possibilities that might be beneficial for all beings. Let's not try to stop. So there's a very poignant expression of this impermanence in the Buddhist teachings. It's from the Upajjhatana Sutta. Upajjhatana Sutta. And it's called the Five Remembrances. Some of you know this, I know. And here they are. I feel like many of you could do this. The first is, I am of the nature to grow old. There is no way to escape growing old. The second is, I am of the nature to be ill. There is no way to escape illness. The third is, I am of the nature to die. There's no way to escape death. The fourth is, all that is dear to me, everyone I love, everyone who loves me, they're all subject to this change too. There's no way that I am not going to be separated from them, or that they will not be separated from me. And the fifth one is my actions. My actions, my conduct, my choices. They are my only true belongings. And there is no way to escape the ramifications of my actions, my choices. My choices, my actions are the ground upon which I stand, you stand, or as the case may be, we sit. These are the five remembrances. And I think, even though I think some people might feel sobered up by this, maybe when you're younger you feel sobered, and when you get older, you look at it as a little flashlight pointing at the preciousness, the exquisite preciousness of every single moment. Every single moment. Gave me goosebumps. So Koban Roshi, the founder of our temple here, Jikoji, famously has this line that he's quoted about with non-Buddhists too. I really love this, and I hope you love it too. He said this, the more you sense the rareness and the value of your own life, the more you realize that how you use it, how you manifest, is all your responsibility. We face such a big task. So naturally, we sit down for a while. So he's talking about this fifth remembrance. It's your action that you cannot escape. It's sobering. So we drive up the windy mountain road to sit down for a while and contemplate our existence, this shared existence, these five remembrances of aging and illness and death. They can feel like intruders sometimes, like they're a threat to our practice, but our practice teaches us that's not the case. These are inevitable changes. So we sit down, as Coben suggests. We sit down for a little while, and we pay attention to this life, just as it is. Not trying to make it something else. And not trying to get anything out of it either. Just sitting with it as it is. In Zen circles, we sometimes call this noticing of what's happening when you're sitting down, kind of within a framework called the guest and the host. And I spoke with Jiro this week about it. Jiro's a lot of experience in Japan. And this line, the host and the guest, the host within the host, actually, is the line from the sutra that we chanted this week. So at breakfast, I was talking to him about host and within the host and the guest and the host. And then I went to my quarters and I Googled host and guest in Japanese culture. And it turns out I learned a new word, and the word is omotenashi. Omotenashi, which translates, although Jiro said this morning that it really doesn't have a translation, but nevertheless, Google thinks it does. And Google says the translation is wholehearted hospitality. Isn't that lovely? Wholehearted, giving your whole heart to it. And I really appreciate this because I think that the nature of that kind of hospitality is really designed to decrease any kind of separation between us. It's like an agreement that we are going to engage in this moment, and then the next moment, and then the next moment. This mutuality that has nothing to do with me or you, but us arising and sharing life together. I really like that because the fact is we know that every single moment is fleeting. It's impermanent. And so we agree kind of to go through this moment, co-creating it together, co-creating this this moment of the river of time without a sense of separation. And that moment of time that we co-create in Japanese is called Ichigo Ichie. I actually knew this term because I play a Japanese bamboo flute called the shakuhachi, which actually comes from China. I've been educated. My shakuhachi flute teacher taught me Ichigo Ichie a long time ago because he said, you can never play the same phrase the same way. You will not play the same phrase. So in much of the music that I play, it's honkyoku. It's old Chinese music. Although I thought it was Japanese until I was educated this week. There's a lot of phrases that are repeated. There are motifs that are just repeated multiple times in each piece and also multiple times across the volume of honkyoku music, which is what it's called, that collection that I play. So, Ichigo Ichie, you will never play it the same twice, which makes sense, right? You will never step in the river the same way. It's exactly right. So we drive up the windy mountain road and we take our seats. As Coben suggested, take a seat and meet yourself. And we sit down. And when we sit down, impermanence pretty much arrives immediately in your facing and meeting yourself. There's a memory. Well, it's gone. There's your old boyfriend, your old girlfriend, your parents, your siblings, your knee, your back, your itch, your loss, your joy. They inhabit this room. Everybody's impermanence is floating around while we sit together. And as we sit with all these fleeting sensations and perceptions and emotions, you have a sense that you're watching, but that there's also a watcher watching you watch. And you start wondering, well, who's the watcher watching the watch? And that's the host. So in Japanese culture, the guest and the host. There's a guest, all the stuff that's impermanent and moving around. And there's the host. The host is the one who receives all those guests. All of those variations of you, all those expressions of you and everyone else and everything else since the beginning of time. Guests. And so when you start to watch the watcher watching, you notice that even that is impermanent. That's changing. That's not fixed. The river of time actually is moving, and you notice, and you feel it. And this is not something you can get from reading a book, kids. It comes from sitting. That's why Koban said, take a seat. So what remains with the host and the guest and everybody's moving and what's left? What's left is very intimate, right? It's very personal. It has to do with each of you and each of us and all of us together. Individual little lights on the tree outside. Which is to say that when we sit down to face life, to allow it all through and in and around us, to recognize that it's happening in this very fluid way, we are not trying to escape impermanence by coming to Jokoji. We can't hide here. That's not what we do. When we sit down, we're doing something quite different. We're actually aware that we're entering the stream, the big flowing stream, whether or not it's off the waterfall or around a slow bend. We're definitely not trying to control our minds. We're definitely not trying to control life. We're definitely not trying to control anything. We're just meeting what's already here. We're actually, I think, discovering the place where the river flows freely, where nothing is an obstruction. And if you practice, I mean, don't listen to me, don't believe me. It doesn't do you any good to believe me. It's not that kind of experience. But if you practice enough, and I highly recommend sitting down, if you do this enough, you, I think, will find for yourself this place where the things you think are problems are absolutely not problems. It's just movement. And you'll meet it the best you can. And so will we, together with you. So Dogen Zenji, Dogen is the 13th century Zen monk, the founder of this bigger umbrella. Koban founded this temple in this way, but Dogen founded Soto Zen, and he calls Zazen the Dharma gate of joyful ease. And when you first come to practice, you might not look at it that way. Your knees might hurt, you might have, you know, discomfort, and you might have a lot of people in the room with you. And you might think they shouldn't be there. But you'll get over that if you keep sitting. And or maybe you won't, I don't know. But this is returning to kind of a place before language divides it into good and bad, and I like this and I don't like that, and I shouldn't have that feeling, and I don't like that thought, and I don't want that memory. And that is also called shikantaza. Zazen is also called shikantaza. Shikantaza means, shikan means only or precisely. Ta means, or shikan means nothing. Ta means precisely. Za means sitting down. So precisely sitting, maybe. Precisely sitting, or nothing but sitting. And I had said earlier that most of us come here and they all of us, I think, come here wanting something from this practice. After all, if we're going to sit down and face that wall for 40 minutes, like some of you did this morning, and then 10 minutes of walking, and then another 30 minutes, you should get a gold star when you leave, right? You should get something out of this. It's not so easy. We should get an award, or while we're sitting, we should get a special experience, right? We should all be levitating. And we want all of our friends to notice we're levitating so that we get recognized for our levitations. Most of us actually are... How many of you don't consider yourself a high achiever? Right? There were no hands. We come here thinking that, you know, I know how to get things done, man. Let's go. I'm this person too. And we sit down and we think, okay, bring it on. I'm ready. Enlighten me, world. And that will happen. Just not at all the way you expect it. It will not conform to your expectations. No surprise, really. Life does not conform to your expectations. How many of you have had a life so far that went exactly according to plan? No hands. Well, maybe there's one of you. I don't think so. So after a while, you kind of give up any notions of having it your way, right? You're like, oh my goodness. You fall into the arms of the host. You just surrender. Okay, fine. Meanwhile, we're just sitting. We're just sitting, paying attention to this, and this, and this, and everything that we can experience by just sitting down. Eventually the mind kind of settles down, kind of the mind sits down too. And we're in this very awake, it's not sleepy, it's a very awake and alert space, I would say, that is just sitting and nothing else. It's like here we have a lot of deer. I'm sure you've seen some or will see some. And if you ever see a deer and you walk up, and the deer are all over the place, so you walk up and you kind of like, oh, excuse me. I always say that to them, excuse me. And they've heard a twig or the feet on the gravel, and they stop what they're, you know, they chew in that really funny way. They stop chewing and they look at you, and their ears prick and they rotate. And I always feel their ears like they're on my head. My ears are moving just like these giant deer ears. And we're looking at each other, and we're so alert. Both of us, all of us, so alert. Like, what's going to happen next? That's shikantaza, that kind of alert. What's here? What's going to happen next? Not like a threat, just like, I heard that twig snap or that foot on the gravel. What's happening? What's happening? Kind of awake. Really awake. And that becomes very simple and direct experience in shikantaza, very awake, very alert. And you don't need to judge it, and you don't need to describe it to yourself. It's just sitting, really alert, really awake. When we practice zazen, when we sit down and meet ourselves and meet our responsibility for whatever this is, we meet impermanence too, through all those guests moving through this experience and the host. And things slow down. We let go of any sense that something should be happening or that we should get anything out of it. We don't feel anything but compassion for the one who's sitting, the one who's sitting with us. The whole world is sitting with us. We're sitting with the whole world. Like watching the light on the leaf outside, everything slows down. And it's just everybody making a precious moment together all over the world. So this week, my friend Randy sent me a poem. He's right there. And I want to share it with you, just to close. It's by Leonard Cohen, and it's from the Book of Mercy. I think it will remind you of the feeling of surrender and fall into the arms of the host, which is all of us, everywhere. Not just us, by the way. The trees and the light, all of existence. In the eyes of men, he falls. And in his own eyes, falls. He falls from his high place. He trips on his achievement. He falls to you. He falls to know you. It's sad, they say. See his disgrace? Say the ones at his heel. But he falls radiantly toward the light to which he falls. They cannot see who lifts him as he falls, or how his falling changes. And he himself, bewildered, till his heart cries out to bless the one who holds him in his falling. And in his fall, he hears his heart cry out. His heart explains why he is falling, why he had to fall. And he gives over to the fall. Blessed are you, clasp of falling. He falls into the sky. He falls into the light. None can hurt him as he falls. Blessed are you, shield of falling. Wrapped in his fall, concealed within his fall, he finds his place. He is gathered in. While his hair streams back and his clothes tear in the wind, he is held up, comforted. He enters into the place of his fall. Blessed are you, embrace of the falling, foundation of the light, master of the human accident. Your turn. This is when I get to be quiet and you get to ask questions, and I try to meet you where you are, or you meet me. Maybe you're going to teach me something today. I hope so. So anything you'd like? Shall I start with the friends online? Put you under the gun? Thank you, Reingard. She said something nice. Thanks, Reingard. It's nice to see you. I actually can't see you, but hi, honey. Kiyu, Daryl, can we see you, my friend? Do you have the bandwidth? Hi, Reingard. Your hand is up. I don't know if you meant it. It's down. Okay, maybe not. Akbar.
Well, I just want to share a personal experience about what you said about the practice. That since I've been practicing it, every time I'm doing something else, in, you know, playing in my garden or in my workshop or whatever I do, all of a sudden it's just like I wake up and smell the coffee. All of a sudden I look around. Come out of whatever I was doing, and it was just all of a sudden the whole thing is so beautiful, and it's just a momentary awareness of the whole thing, and that really has helped me quite a bit, just waking up and smelling the coffee, so to speak.
Thank you, Akbar. Thanks for waking up and smelling the coffee, so to speak. Okay, Kiyu, your hand is up again, so please go.
Yes. So I listened to what you said, and when you said that it was my turn or our turn to speak, the first thought that came to mind is that I don't have any words. There's nothing for me to say and nothing that I can say that would complement anything that has been said. And so the only thing that I find appropriate for me to do is to simply sit, because that completes everything that you just said. That brings me to this moment. That is it.
Thank you. This is it. You're right. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, can I just say ditto to what Kiyu said? That was absolutely. Yeah. Sublime and ecstatic at the same time. Thank you so much.
Thank you for picking the thistle. She was here picking the thistle out of the ground the other day. That's a
You're
big difference,
welcome.
really.
There's a lot.
Well, ask Jackie, not nearly as much as the, what's it called, the bad stuff? Stinky Mike.
Stinky Mike. Oh, we've
Stinky
renamed
Bob.
it.
Wait, Stinky what? Stinky Bob. Sorry, honey.
Stinky Bob.
Stinky Mike. My partner's on there. Stinky Mike's here.
I would just like to add, I was up at Jokoji yesterday, pulling mostly Stinky Bob, and my body was very tired this morning as I sat, but my mind was not tired, but my body was totally at peace, and it gave me a really nice, solid, I just felt, I'm just here, I'm just here. And I wasn't restless in any way, and that really was supportive of my sitting. So I recommend everyone to come up to Jokoji and pull Stinky Bob to
Yeah, because
support
then the
their
next day,
practice.
yeah, then the next day you'll sit and you'll be in pain, but you'll feel fine about it. Thank you, Jackie. And thank you for pulling Stinky Bob. It's winning, but
Yep.
yeah, go ahead. Somebody was speaking. Yeah. Okay, anybody here? Taishin-san.
Thank you for the talk. I couldn't help but smile when you included that few lines from Kogun that everyone seems to enjoy when we realize that this life and how we live it is all our responsibility. A nice way of capturing that fifth remembrance. Naturally, we sit down for a while. Feels a little sobering, right? A couple of years ago, I started to hear those words in a different way, probably a complimentary way. And I thought I would invite you to speak to them as liberating.
Oh, yeah.
It's all my responsibility. My deeds are the ground on which I sit or stand. So I can sit down for a while. And thank goodness. And so
Yes.
I invite you to maybe share
Yes,
anything more.
thank you for using the word liberative because that is actually what happens. Not just in the relief of sitting down, like I can sit down, as Taishin just explained, but also, you know, when you develop a practice, I mean, I don't actually know how it works. I wish I could tell you. Maybe I don't want to know how it works. But I'm not a believer. Let's put it that way. I'm not a believer in something outside. But I do know that when I put my tushy on this cushion, and I've been doing that for quite some time, that something happens. And the something that typically happens is liberative. Ultimately, incredibly liberative. And if we were going to use words to describe that, it would be that there isn't a me that's separate from you or anything else. And that feels, even though sometimes intellectually, we might think that's terrifying. Like, what do I mean? I'm completely bound up with everybody else. You're bound up in liberation with everybody else, kind of. Sounds terribly Zen and paradoxical, sorry. But it's hard to talk about these things because language is not exactly the place where they exist. I don't know exactly how to talk about that either. But the fact is, it is liberative. I can use that word pretty freely because the experience itself is, oh, we're all in this together. Everything, every little tiny speck of dust, the entire universe, we're together. And so maybe there's not something to grasp onto and call me or mine or, you know, I'm controlling this little steering wheel. There might not be that, but there is this. And you don't get to own it, but you get to swim in it. And that's liberation. And the thing that's really incredible about this is that it informs your whole life. It's not just sitting here, you know, looking at your navel, kids. It's how do I want to be? Knowing this, knowing that I am endlessly connected, that life is incredibly fleeting, it's going to be over tomorrow. Really. We know where we're going. All of us, even the young kids, know where we're going. It gets a little bit more real. And it's liberative. When I was sitting, when I was giving instruction this morning, I have to wear my phone, my watch, which is connected to my phone, because I need a timer so I get down here in time. But I have it on, you know, nobody can call me, nobody can reach me, that kind of thing, except a few people, my kids, my brothers, Michael. That's it. And my phone is ringing the whole time. And my mother is about to be 97. She's mentally great, but her health is not well. I just come back from being with her, and everyone's calling me, and I'm concerned that she's dead. You know, it could be happening like that. I talked to her yesterday, but that's how it is when you're 97 almost. It could be any minute. And, you know, I could see what was happening, but here was a room full of people wanting to come up the hill to sit, to meet themselves, and I spent that time with them, and then I ran off afterwards for a few minutes and made sure she's okay. She's okay. She's okay until she's not okay, like us, all the time. Right? That's how it is. Let's not pretend it's otherwise. That's where the liberation is, right? It's okay right now. Maybe it's not feeling okay, but that's okay too, because that's what's here. How many people in this room have buried somebody you love? How many people have watched somebody suffer through an illness, someone you love? These are the remembrances, right? I won't ask how many of you are dead. I hope none of you feel dead. But that's how it goes. And there is this incredible preciousness about life when you understand that. So thank you for reminding me of that word, liberative. It's a big word. There's someone here who's very pregnant. Yes? Are you pregnant?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm very much feeling very connected to you today because there's my mother, and I'm a mother, and you're about to be a mother. And then my friend here has come, has twins, and I'm feeling this connection of the womb that gave birth to all of us. And we're very fortunate to be here. Not just here, but alive.
Thank you, Ninzen. It has been a while that I be part of the sitting. But, and I personally didn't have a lot of time to sit with all the things going on in life. But funny thing is how you say, a lot of times we think, Shigen Taza, when you're sitting by yourself, it's to intuitively it feels that you're being taken away from what you're being working on. But funny thing that there are moments in my life, my husband will be, you're too crazy, can you go sit? So for that moment, it gave me an understanding that what Koban has wrote about Shikantaza is when you sit, you're not just sitting by yourself, but the whole world is sitting with you. He mentioned that your glass is sitting with you. And I think that time didn't really mean much to me till when the, I would say after effect, even though it's no after and before, but how after the sitting and you have more practice out of the sitting and how you being around with people. And I think that is when Shikantaza is actually taking its place. That the twin screaming and frustration wouldn't get to me, but it's more clearly in seeing that what I need at that moment. And it drove me crazy for sure. When they tear the books, that's my pet peeve, I can't stand. But at that moment, it's also realizing that it is your choice and your stand to meet them where they were. So that was, I would start calling in my motherhood Shikantaza. And in many ways, I might not be able to sit like I can now because it's already, it's also a privilege to be able to sit here while my husband taking care of them. But to feel, I think I had that worry before I was pregnant or during I was pregnant that I could not do this again till they're 16 years old and able to take care of themselves. But and also make me feel this supportive network that making the Shikantaza actually can happen is tremendous, and how we're so connected in that even looking as a small act of just sit. So I just want to share that, and it's fabulous and very grateful for everything happened. So thank you.
That's beautiful. Yeah, we're not sitting here to sit here. We are just sitting, but it permeates your life. And you get to go and meet the screaming twins from a place of, well, what's here? What needs to be addressed? And, you know, if it didn't make you crazy, you'd be not a human being, and that would be scary. But it also is full of joy. You know? It just is so rich. And it's going to be over tomorrow. Ask any parent in this room. It's so fast, my friend. I mean, everyone tells you that, but it is so fast. It's actually just like we talked about, the physicists and slow in time. When they're really little, man, is it slow. It's like every day is almost taking forever, especially when they're sick. And then something happens, and it's fast, fast, fast. And so you take your practice, and we have your back all the time, and you have ours. So, I mean, when you experience this interconnection, it's there's nothing to be lost. It's always, it exists. It's just an idea that it could go away. But you just sit down and you're in the middle of it again. And thank you for bringing up the time commitment because, I mean, I had two young children and a law practice and I quit practicing law and homeschooled them. I mean, I went really in the deep end of parenthood. And that had very little time to do anything. I remember them, you know, hanging at the door when I wanted to pee. Every parent has had this experience. It's really hard to carve time out. But for all of you who are in the midst of that kind of very dense life, and in some ways I am in the midst of a dense life even here, you don't need much, do you? Just sit in the parking lot at Trader Joe's before you walk in for 30 seconds. Come back to where we are. You don't have to do anything or go anywhere. You don't even have to come to Jikoji, though I'm really happy to see you. But you don't have to. You carry it around. Enso-san.
Yeah, hi. You hear me okay?
I can.
I really enjoyed your talk. The thing that struck me about the host, there's so much, everything supports us. It reminded me of a story of, this guy, Milton. He was at a camp, a summer camp, And it was all about, horses. And he knew a lot about horses, but he saw this horse standing in front of the administration building for a long time, just standing there. And he went up and he got on the horse, and the horse took him down a road for about 4 or 5 miles. And finally, the horse pulled up in front of a farmhouse. And the owner of the farmhouse came out and said, "Hey, that's my horse. How did you know how to find me?" And he said, "Well, I didn't know, but the horse knew." And that reminded me of what you were saying about the host, that there's just this deeper understanding inside of all of us that, called the heart mind, that Prajnaparamita just has a lot of this wisdom if we could just get out of our own way. But thanks for the reminder about the host.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Tim. That's an interesting phrase, get out of your own way. I used to use that phrase a lot. I think I still think of myself in the way, but I want to be a little bit more generous with the one in the way and say she's not in the way. Like she has to be in the river of time and experience like everything else. So she's not really in the way. She's just here with everything else. And if I can allow whatever obstruction I think she's making, then she's not an obstruction. She's just part of this vast array of existence in any given moment. And she's not going to hang around anyway, because nothing does. So I'm going to sit with this and think about whether or not any of us are ever in the way. I think about the world sometimes, and I have some difficulty with our continued craziness, how we treat each other. And I can't quite give up, and yet I've given up. It's both and. Like I can't see it as the end, because I think this is where we are. I know this is where we are, and this is where we're going to have to be until we're someplace else. And I think we can get someplace else. We will get someplace else, whether or not I think it, because it's going to move. Maybe everything's going to go away, and except for the trees, or maybe they'll go away too. I don't know. But I don't know if anything's in the way. I have to think about that a little bit more. Thank you. You've given me a teaching. Yes, Roxy.
So I want to echo something that Taishin mentioned about liberation. So yesterday,
speak up so they can hear you
yeah,
too,
so
please.
yesterday the sensei Misha said that out of all the choices you can do in your day, you chose to be here. What is your attention? Pay attention to that and then drop it. So I thought of that question, what is my intention to be here? I thought that I wanted to feel liberated. But today with your talk and the practice, I feel like why do we feel not liberated at present? It's like
Why
the
do you feel not
seeking,
liberated at
I
present?
feel liberated already. That's why I want to. So throughout the journey, I feel like a lot of people feel that they are not liberated, they're seeking for the liberation, and that kind of becoming a suffering itself. Yeah.
You mean
Like
wanting
feeling,
something?
yeah. What is that? What are the things that are constraining you from being liberated? Have you thought of that? I think I thought of that, but I don't have the answer. You have your own answers. But why do you feel that you're not liberated at present?
This is a koan for you to polish. And for all of us to polish, right? This is a very important question. What is here that you think is a problem
Yeah.
that's interfering with your freedom?
Yes.
I can't tell you. I mean, I
Yeah.
could tell you, but
I think
what good would that do
this is a
you?
question for all of you, and
It's
then you can think for yourselves.
It's a question for you. It's a question for you. You should. You want to take this up because it's not going to stay. Your answer will not stay. Nothing stays. So you have to be willing to let that continue, like polishing, 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 never-ending polishing. I'm going to polish this question and polish this question. And it'll be liberative.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Yes, I just hope that no one is suffering from feeling they're not liberated at present.
Well, you know, Koban, another thing that Koban was very famous for, and I think I mentioned this to you the other day, no helping. Help yourself.
Yeah.
If you help, if you take care of this one, that'll take care of the rest of the world. Because it's a lot of what you said. You take care of what's right in front of you. Or Michael said one time, tend your own garden. So take care of your garden. And you're taking care of the food source for the whole world. Because you will take this into the world, into your children's lives, into your partner's lives, into the stranger at Trader Joe's lives. Everywhere you go, you will be watering the good stuff. So you, I would get away from any notions of saving or helping. Even though we chant, we're about to do it. Think of saving all beings as all these beings, whoever they are, which are all these beings, which is all these beings. Just take care of your garden.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.